AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We are back in our spots after that quick trip to Nashville. And while we were there, another ethanol study was released that turned into another drive-by hit job by non-ag media. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about a record-setting month for cattle.
Live from the afterglow of TPS via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Greg Henderson from Drovers, then it's Emily Score from Growth Energy, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Hey, buddy. Yeah, how you doing? You know, I was hoping that when I got back to the studio, I would have a fully recharged battery.
Yeah.
It's mostly there. Okay. But, you know, it's just travel. It took just the top end off it.
Yeah.
You know, getting back home, driving home in some of the snow and rain and ice and crap last night for a little while anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I'm good. How are you?
Really great. Yeah. I'm glad you made it home all right. It sounds like the Top Producer Summit was an absolute smash this year.
Yeah. Great group of people there, a great lineup of speakers and topics and conversation. Some of the topics are at TPS, just so everybody understands, these are deep topics that sometimes take two or three times to listen to before it really starts to set in and you get this real understanding of exactly what you should be doing, how you should be doing it. That's why succession planning is always a topic at TPS. Mm-hmm. But one of the presenters that really had everybody going was meteorologist Snodgrass was there. And it was interesting as he was talking about the outlook for this summer and what to watch. And we've talked about it on AgriTalk, Davis. There's that pool of cold water up in the Gulf of Alaska.
Okay.
And if that starts to make its way down the coastline, mm-hmm. and makes its way closer to the lower 48, then it increases the odds of getting some drought into the Midwest. Right now, he says we've already got a 30%, but if we start to see an expansion of that cool water, then you mm-hmm. better look out because it's the odds of a drought increases. It really had everybody's attention after Craig was done down there.
I guess I would say a little
more focused maybe on what is going on in the 2022 new crop futures markets. So that was
cool.
Well,
we've spent a ton of time, and rightfully so, on South American weather. It's been such a focus, but we can't lose our grip on, you know, I'm going to keep preaching this, but you got to go into a growing season assuming normal weather, right? That's our line lately.
Yep.
But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with looking ahead and trying to figure out, like, maybe how you might need to adjust if you know what I mean?
Yeah. That is exactly right. It's one of the reasons that we talk about maintaining some flexibility in marketing plans and so on. So we'll talk more about that in upcoming shows.
Great.
But let's go ahead and get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, initial jobless claims increased to a seasonally adjusted 248,000 last week from 225,000 a week earlier, the Labor Department said. New filings for unemployment benefits have largely stayed below 250,000 per week since mid-November. Continuing claims, that's a proxy for the total number of people receiving unemployment benefits through regular state programs, declined to 1.59 million for the week ended February 5 from 1.62 million a week earlier. So we've got that continuing claims number moving in the right direction, Chip.
Yeah, we certainly do. And it was the January jobs data that got everybody kind of, I think, refocused on, you know what, maybe this is working a little better than what many had anticipated. Mm-hmm. So we need another month's worth of data on it for sure.
The International Energy Agency urged OPEC and its allies to address a widening shortfall in their oil production as volatile markets sends crude prices rocketing toward $100 per barrel. While fuel consumption is bouncing back from the pandemic, the 23-nation alliance led by Saudi Arabia and Russia is struggling to restore output it had halted, Chip.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And the energy markets, I mean, they've been all over the place. I don't know if we're going to see this $100 crude or not, but it sure feels like that's where we're headed.
Yeah, it really does. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack wants the Department of Justice to ensure seed companies and other input suppliers are not using their market power and current conditions to raise prices unfairly. Vilsack said, quote, "It's important for us to ask questions about whether all of these increases, every penny of these increases, is justified based on disruptions, based on supply, based on the normal economics."
Investigation into the input costs. There are a lot of market forces at play. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when we see the Biden administration and USDA Secretary Vilsack say, okay, let's take a look at these meat prices. Boy, that's got to be the packers' fault. It's nothing that we've done. It's none of the economic conditions that we've created. Right. Boy, look at the input price. Yeah, should we ignore what's going on with some of the tariffs out there? Should we ignore all of this? You know, there are some self-inflicted wounds on these input prices. Should it be investigated? Sure, let's take a look at it. But let's turn the results around a little bit quicker than what the DOJ has on the cattle.
Right.
Yes.
Well, the Biden administration says it will not work with China as it reaches out to countries in the Indo-Pacific region with its Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, according to a U.S. State Department official. Consumers and restaurants are facing another supply crunch after the U.S. suspended all avocado imports from Mexico. The action followed a credible death threat issued to a U.S. safety inspector who denied permission for a shipment from a Mexican state. Avocados are the single largest American fruit import. Over 90% of the nation's avocados came from Mexico, which exports over 80% of its crop to the United States. I just bought some avocados last night, actually.
Did you?
I did. I didn't realize that a U.S. safety inspector was in a life and death situation with the avocados down there in Mexico, bro.
Yeah,
but this has happened before. They had been threatened before, and they said, you do this again, we're going to embargo. And here we are.
Wow. Here we are. Okay.
USDA's climate initiatives drew attention during USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack's fireside chat, where he answered questions from NASDA members. Right now, he said, quote, those early adopters are not getting credit because nobody's keeping score. This program allows us to keep score and allows us to tell the world what agriculture is doing.
Wow.
Democrats have called for the suspension of LNG permits while the Energy Department investigates the impacts of increased exports on domestic energy prices. A group of Republicans has sent a letter speaking against that action. Meanwhile, the Senate scrutinized Biden's energy policies on the floor yesterday.
Yeah. Do the new truck orders.
Orders for new trucks and trailers have weakened in recent months as manufacturers limit sales while they try to cut into backlogs driven by parts shortages. FTR Transportation Intelligence expects North American makers of Class 8 trucks to fall 85,000 units short of demand. Quite the shortfall.
Unbelievable.
There.
Unbelievable. And, I mean, when it comes to pickup trucks, Davis, the conversation about can we get a hold of those was a very popular conversation in Nashville. All right. Hey, when we come back, let's get into a conversation about cattle. We've got Greg Henderson, Drovers, up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeat's February 22nd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerepeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello, everyone.
If I sounded a little distracted during the news segment, I may have been because an email came through, caught my attention, and I know that I should stay focused on exactly what I'm doing, but you catch the headline in some of these emails, and this one really drew my attention. It's from the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Let us know that Jerry Passer has passed.
Oh, geez.
Jerry was at WMT in Cedar Rapids for many years, wrapped up at Brownfield. That's where he retired from. This one hits pretty close to home for me.
Yeah.
Because I was an intern at WMT back in 1986. Jerry, of course, was the farm director there.
Yep.
Yeah, Rich Ballvans was working there with Jerry. So, yeah. Dang it.
Yeah, yeah.
That one caught my attention. Sorry about that, everyone.
No, that's fine. Well, and my dad was close with him as well. Time down at WMT. Didn't know him quite as well myself, although there were times when he and I were able to connect. And one of those broadcasters who's just been in the business so long. So much to learn from a guy like that, and just to chat with him was a real treat.
And
so he'll be missed.
You know, I'm not saying that his job completely 100% defined him. Jerry had interests outside of broadcasting, and outside of spreading the information that was important to producers. But that guy lived his job.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So, rest in peace, Jerry. Okay.
Amen.
Let's move on to a record-setting month that we've got going here in some of the things in the cattle industry. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing well. We've got quite a snowstorm going on here in Kansas City, but the weekend's looking good.
All right. Did you get the rain and the ice first, or did it go straight to snow?
Well, we got it went straight to snow south and east of here. They did get rain and some ice on top of it. I have not seen news reports if how bad the damage was from the ice, but I'm sure there will be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a heck of a storm. I mean, it covers a lot of ground. People just be careful. Please be careful. I mean, we've got a lot of people that are traveling home from Nashville, making their way home from Top Producer Summit. People heading down to Louisville to the National Farm Machinery Show, probably going right through the middle of it, Greg. Please be careful out there.
Well, yeah. We welcome the moisture, and in parts of this area, we need it desperately. I talk to my friends in the Panhandle of Texas right now, and they are really thinking that the drought is really got a grip on them. They're hoping for some spring rains to ease that up. But right now I had one person tell me that he's not expecting his place to green up because there's no water there.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the guys that we talked to down in Nashville that from the western areas, it's really, really tough. No question. Okay, I love your the first line of your notes from this morning, Greg. Everything is record high for February except cattle prices. that's been the problem for a while.
That is the problem, and in fact, cattle prices, so fed cattle are up 20% from where they were last year. So the problem is that, so are grain prices. I didn't figure that percent, but I know they're up at least that much, Chip. You have a better handle on that than I do. But, boxed beef prices are higher. They're higher at retail. We've been talking about demand being higher. wow, it's just all snowballed.
Yep.
Not all against the cattle producers, but a lot of it has. It's been a struggle.
Yeah. Let's talk about the supply side of this first. We don't have a record number of animals coming to market, but we've got some record weights out there, Greg. And we've had some slaughter disruptions because of some labor issues that were tied to COVID. I think we're through most of that now. Is that the feeling that you're getting?
Yes, we are through most of that. And another signal this week, Chip, was the online fed cattle auction. Cattle brought 142 to 142 and a half, and some of them had a floor of 143 that didn't get sold. Then there were reports of this week feed yards passing on 143 prices. So that's pretty good indication that they're pretty current. They're pretty confident that packers are going to want cattle, and we'll see by the end of tomorrow if they do actually get that 144 or more. But all of those things suggest that feed yards are more current now. We've worked through these larger numbers. They killed 659,000 head last week, which was the biggest kill of the year. Further indication we're working through those numbers. However, we know that we've got big numbers coming later in the summer, early summer, late spring.
Right. Okay. You know, on those weights, Greg, the genetics that we've got in the feed yard now, I think they can handle more weight. And isn't there's just simply more demand, I believe, for the choice and the prime carcasses out there, isn't there?
There is more demand, and we're seeing evidence of that in that, one of the records that we set was the percentage of choice killed last week was 75.5% choice of all the cattle slaughtered. And then we also killed 10% prime. So we're over 85.5% choice and prime, never been anywhere near that,
Greg,
incline goes way back 20 years ago.
Yeah, Greg, we changed the consumer's palate again, I think. I think we changed the quality of beef that they expect when they buy it in the meat case. And when they cook it at home, they're expecting choice now. Select doesn't cut it.
Absolutely. I think that's what we're seeing and what we're finding. And then, you know, we talk about these high prices, but they're still buying it at the elevated prices. We can argue about, is the farmer actually getting a fair share of that or not? I don't know. That's a different argument. But consumers are willing to pay more for beef. That's a given.
Yeah. And you remember Wayne Purcell, Virginia Tech?
Absolutely. Sure.
You know, I saw him. I was early on it was in the 90s at some point. But I saw him at a meeting someplace, and he had the packaging, and we talked about that and how it needed to improve and everything. And he's the one that really drove home, listen, we can sell more beef. We could do that just by lowering the price. The trick is selling the same amount of beef or more at a higher price. That's the true increase in demand.
That's the true increase, yes.
And I think we're seeing it because of the consumers. They're not going to accept anything less than choice or prime now. It's a fascinating consequence of the pandemic and people learning to cook more at home. I think it's really interesting. Okay.
Well, I think you're right. And in addition to that, we have more branded products. And obviously when you say branded beef, you think about certified Angus beef, but there's a lot of certified Hereford beef out there. Yep. There are other brand names that are focused on quality like Sterling Silver. And if you become loyal to a brand, whether you like Wrangler jeans or Levi's, typically you're going to go back to them as long as that quality meets your needs, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So 100%.
One of the aspects of this cattle market, and we talked about things being good, is that we need to talk about the cow-calf profits this year, Chip. And, you know, I rely heavily on Sterling Marketing.
Sterling. Yep.
And his calculations on a cash basis, last year cow-calf producers made about $125 a calf.
Okay.
And he's expecting that to be $200 a calf this year. Okay. If everything falls into place the way we think, you know, I mean, obviously there, you know, pandemics happen and so forth and so on. So that would be a 40% increase, and probably the best cow-calf prices, since 2015.
All right, Greg, good stuff, buddy. We need to talk more. Thank you. We'll talk more later. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, backing off the highs, but we've still got some strength going in the grains, don't we?
Yeah, so soybeans, I'm going to start there. Pumped above $16 again overnight and just couldn't find sustained buyer interest at that level. So same thing as what happened last week, where we pushed above it, and pushed well above it last week, and just couldn't maintain above that level. So that's something to watch. If we can find a fresh wave of buyer interest above that $16 level, then we're probably going to make a move at the highs, and probably in all likelihood we would go above it at that point in time. But for now, you know, we're running out of buyers above that level. And kind of mixed trade across the soy complex this morning. Pressure coming from more than $2 losses in the crude oil market.
Okay. All right. I see that. Yeah. Corn futures really not too far from unchanged right now.
Yeah, they can't really do a whole lot because, you know, you got soybeans kind of bouncing around. The wheat market's pushing to the upside, and wheat, you know, it continues to get mixed signals on Russia and what's going on there. And that may be fully intentional by Putin. Who knows? This is, I think, like I said yesterday, I think I called it mental ping pong, but that's kind of what's going on with the Russian situation right now.
Yep. Take us over to the livestock trade. A little bit of strength in the hogs.
Yeah, so, you know, continued strength there, and just, you know, more of the same, I guess, is the best way to describe it. You know, the buying is relatively limited so far this morning, but we are seeing firmer trade. A little bit weaker across the cattle complex this morning. Still waiting on active cash cattle trade to develop, though the early signs are firmer prices.
Firmer prices on the cash cattle. All right, buddy, thanks, man. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us this morning. Earlier this week, there was a study from the University of Wisconsin that was released It's raised a lot of eyebrows in the ethanol industry, and it deserves some response. And to do that for us, we've got Emily Score, CEO of Growth Energy. Emily, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Thanks for having me, Chip.
Glad that you are here. But doggone it, Emily, don't you feel like a fireman sometimes?
You know, you said raised eyebrows. I think furrowed eyebrows is...
Okay. Perfect.
Is kind of an accurate description. It's frustrating that we are here once again, having to defend and debate something where the science hasn't been overwhelmingly conclusive and consistent. Ethanol has a lower carbon intensity than fossil fuels. And it's frustrating that once again we have to debate it. And there's been a lot of visibility to a study that's cherry picking the information, not being upfront in terms of showing the math, and, you know, flies in the face of the overwhelmingly conclusive evidence of the mainstream researchers.
Yep. Okay. Now, I want to throw this out there and I recognize this, and I know you recognize this as well, Emily. You're a supporter of ethanol because you've seen the studies that are based on current information, current data, and it's when you see the current science behind ethanol production, it's easy to understand how it is helping the environment. And therefore, we can be accused of having a conversation right now that is based on bias confirmation. So we're always going out and looking for the good news in ethanol. No, we don't have to. We know what the good news is on ethanol. But I see some of the comments, some of the leading statements in the release from the University of Wisconsin. And, things like the results confirm what scientists already realized. Really? So what you did was you went out and you found the study that would confirm and prove what you wanted it to prove. I can do that with just about anything as long as you get the funding to do it, right?
Right. Well, and you have to look at the funding of the study. National Wildlife Foundation, they have an established anti-ethanol bias, and they've done this before. And Lark, the author, has come out with anti-RFS papers in the past as well. Yeah. And so it's a good point. It is confirmation bias, but here's our confirmation bias, Chip. Mm-hmm. U.S. Department of Energy's Argonne National Lab, the Environmental Protection Agency, USDA, EH&E, all right, Environmental Health and Engineering, that includes some scientists at Harvard. All right, they're not in the Corn Belt. All right, they're not trying to do confirmation bias when they're doing research. And I would say, in addition, there's two states that are right now, they've got low carbon fuel programs and ethanol is earning credits, California and Oregon. All of those entities have concluded the opposite of what came out of University of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Another leading study that I want you to respond to, or leading statement. It basically reaffirms what many suspected, that corn ethanol is not a climate-friendly fuel. Answer that one for us.
It's so frustrating. Not only are we climate friendly, we're getting better. Our advantage is growing. Right now, we are about a 50% improvement on gasoline in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Off-the-shelf technology gets corn ethanol to 70%. As an industry, we're driving to net zero. We have the means within our reach to get to net zero, and that is where all the capital investment is taking place right now. So it's so frustrating because when you look at the conversation nationally, gas prices, low carbon, what do we do with the 270 million cars on the road? We're the answer to all three of those.
Yeah. Okay. So there was this one in there as well. And this, I think, is an example of cherry picking some of the data out there. Enactment of the renewable fuels standard drove up crop prices, their analysis shows. With corn prices rising by 30% and other commodity crops such as wheat and soybeans by 20%. From 2008 to 2016, corn cultivation in the U.S. expanded by 8.7%, covering an additional 6.9 million acres of land. I think those numbers are probably from the Census of Agriculture because they don't exactly match up with the WASD numbers in there. And that would make sense to me, that there are typically some adjustments in the Census of Ag that I didn't want to spend the time to dig into this morning. But here, let's do this, Emily. In 1986, corn plantings, according to the WASD report, the updated for 2008, U.S. corn producers planted 86 million acres of corn. That was down 7.5 million acres from 2007. So we can change the results of this study by having them, instead of look at the comparison from 2008 to 16, back it up a year to 2007. And there's a half a million acre difference. That's what cherry picking the data means.
That's exactly right. And what about the fact too, that corn yield has increased 20% in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
I mean, the trend line in every measurement, fertilizer, water, plant to acre, acres in terms of planting in the field, and also at the ethanol plant, the trend line is we're doing more with less.
Yep. The statement about fertilizer use up by an extra 3 to 8% each year. Those are measurable numbers. I don't think we need to put a 3 to 8% increase on it. we've got a pretty good idea of just how much it has increased, and based on some of the, and I think that is up to 2016, and I wonder why we stopped in 2016. Could it be because all of a sudden we've got more energy efficient and less less emissions from the newer model tractors that are out there in the field since 2016? That was 7 years ago now. There's six years ago.
Yeah. Well, here's another example. So the concept of land use change, of course, that using corn to make ethanol, we're somehow converting land that was forest or grassland. Okay, so you look at total acreage, that's false. This study, the land use number was 10 times greater in what they used in their calculations than a study that came out of EH&E last year.
Okay.
And an order of magnitude more than USDA, than EPA, than Department of Energy. I mean, it's just the list goes on of how the science speaks for itself.
Okay, Emily, the reason that this is so important is because of the RFS reset, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, the RFS reset. We also need our final blending obligations for 2022 too. So we need the obligations out for this year and for next year as well.
Yeah, but this kind of a study is going to raise enough questions, even though it is based on old cherry picked data, my opinion. That it's going to create enough confusion going into the reset that EPA is going to delay on this. It's a big concern, isn't it?
Well, this is where I'm going to give the career staff at EPA a little bit of credit. In our comments that we submitted to EPA for the proposed blending obligations for 20 and 21 and 22, we had over 650 pages in our comments. And much of that, our appendix, was third-party validated research on every environmental point that they are considering, not only for 22, but for the set. So we're already kind of feeding them. So we've given them the wealth of information. We'll go in and have the conversations. Now, this kind of study doesn't help us with the political discourse, certainly.
Right.
But, you know, I do think, and we've had some conversations presenting the science, they're going to have to take a cold, hard look at the real facts.
Yeah.
When they're going through this.
Exactly. Okay. Enough of putting out the fire. How was your conference last week?
Our conference was great. And here's why. We're at this inflection point as an industry. There was so much excitement about what we're doing to drive down our carbon intensity, our ability to be low carbon for light duty vehicles, but where we could go. I talk about it kind of the blue sky ahead for us in the hard to electrify space. Sustainable aviation was a big topic. I mean, two of my members, Marquis and ADM, they've had major announcements in partnership with sustainable aviation fuel technology that, you know, it's so I think the industry is very excited. They want to get down to the business of making sure that we're driving down to zero for our emissions, so we're as competitive as possible in a carbon constrained economy. Let's do it. Yeah. That's kind of the attitude. Let's go.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's the right attitude to have, you know. And the fresh ideas. I just got to go back to one more thing that was in the study, because it basically said, listen. We should be looking at making the next generation of biofuels, such as those made from perennial non-food plants grown on land less suited for conventional agriculture. Well, that has been part of the RFS from day one, but the problem is we don't have the technology to catch up with it. And what you guys are talking about getting to net zero is so far out in front of where this study ended. It brings me a little relief to know that you guys are out there in the future already with the new technology and so on. It's good stuff, Emily. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're already making the next generation of ethanol.
Yep.
With corn kernel fiber technology. I have members making that today. It's 100% reduction, up to 100% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Now, they're getting credit for it in California. who's approved the technology. EPA hasn't approved the technology. Some of these applications have been at EPA for 5 years, Chip. So this is where the pushback on the regulators is. We need a consistent signal so that I don't have innovators sitting on the sidelines.
Right. Exactly, Emily. Perfect. Well said. That's Emily Score, Growth Energy. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Chip.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory is back.
Yes.
In his chair there at Flory Control. But yeah.
At Flory Control.
Glad to have you back. Glad to have you back.
I want to clear something up very, very quickly. Because if I don't let this clear it up right now, she's going to hear about it, and I'll have to deal with it later. The person that has control at the Flories does not sit in this chair very often.
Okay? Are you saying you're just some sort of figurehead? Is that what it is? You're like a monarch type of deal there? And there's this guy. You bet. You're great and everything. But, okay, we got stuff to do, Chip.
Yeah. Thing. Put your radio thing away. Let's go. Okay, I'm sorry. I just had to
clear it up. No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, that's an interesting window into the life of Chip. You just have fun with your friends on your little radio show there, Chip. Well, that's awesome. A couple of things. I don't even know where I would want to start here. Fascinating conversation about confirmation bias, which is something we haven't talked much about.
Okay.
But you're right. When you say, hey, give me an issue and I can, you know, with enough funding or even just with what's already out there, I can find just about any message that you want me to apply
absolutely
to that issue. And that makes it difficult.
I think that's absolutely right. And I should know more, and I will know more when I get an opportunity to spend some time to learn more about the lead researcher on this study, Lark, better understand some of the work that he has done in the past and so on. But like I said, just the way that it is written, it's the report from the University of Wisconsin. It starts with leading statements and then tops it off with, you know, a time constraint on a study. Why did we stop at 2016? There's six more years worth of data in here that we could use. And we've got the DEF fuel systems out there now, or exhaust systems out there now. We talk about that with machine repeat all the time. They started coming on earlier than 2016. I get that. But the amount of emissions-controlled tractors that are out there right now compared to 2016 – the number has got to be staggering. So it just the lack of real time data in the analysis that is being done on this is really frustrating.
Yeah. Yesterday on the show in the afternoon, we had Jack Scoville at the helm, but we were talking with Sal Gilberte from Tucrium.
Yeah, Sal.
And he was awesome. He's really great. It was good to talk to him again. He was talking about all of the crushing capacity that's coming online.
Right.
And we learned a new word. What was it? Soft seed crushers?
Soft seed crush.
Yep. Soft seed crush. He made a couple of points that I thought were interesting and a sort of took me down a rabbit hole. I want to send you down that rabbit hole and see what comes out the other end. But current soybean prices, it's going to be tough for a crusher to make money.
crush margins are going to be tight. Yeah. Unless we see some additional strength in the meal and the oil. Now, the problem with getting some additional strength in the oil is even on those that are currently producing renewable diesel, you get up north of 65 cents in soybean oil and they start to back off a little bit on their demand. One of the things that I picked up on the panel that I moderated at Top Producer Summit, which had Dan Bossi from Ag Resource, Pete Meyer from S&P Global Platts, Steve Nicholson from Rabo Research, was the refining of the vegetable oil or the feedstock to make renewable diesel. You can speed up, you can slow down, you can speed up, you can slow down, you can speed. It's so when you are feeding, when you're putting a cheaper feedstock into the system, you can speed up the refining process on it and put more product out the other end. If you're looking at more expensive feedstock like soybean oil over 65 cents a pound, you can slow things off and back off on your production some while still keeping the plant up and running. It's not like an ethanol plant where in most cases, if you're going to run full efficiency, you're going to run 100% full efficiency for as long as you can. But you on the refiners, it's a little bit different than that. So you can move things around. So price matters yet was my big takeaway because I've been saying for a while that on sustainable aviation fuel, which is going to be sourced from ethanol for the most part, that the airlines aren't going to give up billions of dollars of a, you know, of a market because the fuel is too high priced. Well, maybe they will back off a little bit.
Yeah.
Cut down on the number of flights, stuff like that.
Yep. The other thing that he brought up, and this might just make you crazy, so we don't have much time left anyway. But he did bring up that we could see a revival in the food versus fuel debate.
I think definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, and his point was, the corn, all right, it's sort of secondary sort of food versus fuel. It's got to go through a hog or a cattle or whatever first.
Not according to Gutfeld. According to Gutfeld on Fox. He just said, hey, we've been taking food out of the mouths of people while turning corn into ethanol. Stop it. Good grief. This is,
Get ready for round two with the soybeans then.
And it is a conversation that is going to require some technical advancements on the crops that we're producing. And it's going to happen. The bottom line is it's going to give an increased revenue opportunity for farmers out there. We'll talk a whole bunch more about this coming ahead. Hey, come back this afternoon, 2:06 Central. We'll talk markets.